To lecture number 7, Implementing Communications-Driven and Group Decision Support Systems. I also want to talk about decision support in virtual organizations. Today, more than ever before, collaborating with peers at other locations is very important to the success of organizations. With distributed organizations, we need to use technology, whether it's video conferencing or a virtual world tool like Second Life, to help us maintain regular contact with people that we maybe only meet face-to-face once or twice a year. Let's move to slide number 2, and slide number 2 talks about some various communication support technology, from very basic audio conferencing to bulletin boards that are web-based to web conferencing, which involves tools like file sharing and whiteboards. Document sharing could be a Google Docs program that allows you to do joint editing, to electronic mail, which has become pervasive in companies, and we've had electronic mail in organizations for at least 20 years, but very commonly for the last 10 to 12 years. And then more place-based group decision support systems and computer-supported face-to-face meetings. Interactive video may be over the internet protocol, or it may use more expensive tools like Polycom to deliver full motion video and sound to remote participants. On slide 3 and in the chapter 7 of the Decision Support Systems Concepts book, you'll see that we have 4 categories of group support. The earliest group support with computer tools was what we call same time and same place, where people would meet together in a room with computer tools like a projector or a TV to display outputs, and then they had specialized tools to help in decision making, like voting or ranking tools. We call this synchronous decision support. Then we also have same time but different place, and this is our distributed meeting setting where we have people in 2, 3, or 4 locations. The people in those locations are there at the same time. They may be in different time zones, but they are using the technology simultaneously. So it's, again, synchronous decision support. Could be video conferencing, audio conferencing, shared whiteboards, screen sharing, or even chat or instant messenger. The table then moves to what we call asynchronous decision support, and that's where the people who are participating in the group decision support are not all using the technology at the same time. For example, you're not listening to this lecture at the same time I'm giving it. So you're listening at a different time. You're participating in the instruction asynchronously. We can have different time, same place, where people are in the same workplace, but they're using the tools and the software at different times. We see that with some workflow or shift work software, even document sharing, where you're working with the same body of knowledge or information or data, but you're using it at a different time than your coworkers who are participating in the decision process. The fourth category is different time, different place. Again, this is asynchronous, not synchronous. And it could be a bulletin board, some kind of an asynchronous group decision support tool, email, or some kind of a voice message or voicemail. It's important, I think, for listeners to realize that decision support varies in each of these four categories, and the tools we use are different. We have a variety of architectures for communications-driven decision support. The decision room architecture is where all of the computers are in the same physical room, and they're connected by a local area network, and we have a display device like a projector or large screen display that allows people in the room to share output and view the same documents or work on their own computers, whether portables or built into a desk or something like that. Then we may have a local area network where everybody's on the same premises, but they're working individually in their offices or in different meeting rooms. Video conferencing decision support is where we have some physical devices that are located in different places, but they're all hooked up using technology, whether it's a dedicated line or an IP line, the internet. And then web-based decision support is where we can basically use the decision support capability from any location that has an internet connection and access to the World Wide Web. Slide five shows a picture of a group decision support room in Finland, and this type of a fixed place or same time, same place room has been used in many different companies and organizations since about 1990. Some of the first rooms were developed at the University of Arizona and by IBM. The group decision support tools located on slide 6 are discussed in the chapter, but an agenda tool provides a list of what's going to happen in the meeting. We call that an agenda. A whiteboard is a tool that multiple people can write on, like a whiteboard in a physical space. An opinion meter asks participants in the meeting what their opinion is on a topic. Idea categorizer takes various ideas that have been generated using some kind of a brainstorming tool or other idea tool and lets members of the same time, same place meeting put them into categories. Electronic brainstorming is where people are either meeting in the same room or in different locations and different times, and they generate ideas to a specific question. Topic commenter is where people can add comments or pieces of information to topics that have been posted on a bulletin board or in a group decision support tool. Voting tools may be rating possible solutions or ranking them. Survey tool asks your opinion on questions. Alternative analysis tools help us to compare alternatives. And then a group outliner helps us to create a document and add text to our outline and cooperatively edit and improve on the document. Slide 7 shows you the agenda tool for the web-based system from GroupSystems.com. And they've improved this tool, and I recommend that you go to GroupSystems.com and look at their application. You can also take a tour there of their product. Slide 9 shows a graph to analyze results so that you see that the alternatives are arrayed on a chart that is based on ratings of the likelihood of something happening and then the impact that will have either on goal accomplishment or some other significant variable that we're evaluating the alternatives on. And you can see the alternatives are things like a new product introduction or increased spending on advertising. Another company that produces a product is MeetingWorks.com, and I also recommend that you look at Facilitate.com. And there's a case study from Facilitate.com at DSSResources.com. Now, when we choose group support software and technologies, there are three dimensions that we want to think about: the kind of task, how large the group is, and where people are located. We can look at a variety of tasks in our model, and some of the what we might call pre-decision tasks are well supported, like brainstorming, and then some of the choice tasks are pretty well supported with group tools. Group size, small groups, 5 to 7 people, we want to use a different type of technology than if we're supporting a group with 100 or 200 people. And then we have tools for all size groups in between. And then group proximity, are people located in the same premises? Are they at different parts of the world or only a few hundred miles apart in the same state? And that certainly changes the dynamics of the tools we can use. Slide 13 has some benefits of group DSS. We're able to leverage the team members' time and there's some research that shows that brainstorming leads to higher quality ideas. We get to record the work of the group. We've removed some of the barriers of time and distance, so the meetings can be held globally, and we can have some asynchronous and some synchronous participants. Slide 14 is a generalization related to task type and the kind of technology or media that we use for decision support. If we want to generate ideas in action, we can use computer meeting tools, even tools like email. But the more sophisticated the computerized decision support, the more we are helping in idea generation and evaluation. Then choosing among alternatives, again, we can do some good things with computerized support. If our goal is to negotiate solutions, then face-to-face is probably better. On slide 15, we look at virtual organizations. And I want to recommend one of the columns that I wrote in late 2007 called What is the Role of Decision Support in Virtual Organizations? We know that organizations are arrangements of people who are trying to work together to accomplish a shared goal. When we add the word virtual in front of organization, it means that people are still working together and coordinating their tasks, but we interconnect them with telecommunications or the World Wide Web, and the members of this virtual organization do all the things we do in a regular organization, but they are not all employed by the same organization. So information technology becomes a key enabler for creating and maintaining and operating virtual organization. You can read some examples in the textbook and in the article of some virtual organizations, especially Hatim Chabi's comments on the virtual organization that he developed, which was called Verifone. Some benefits of virtual organizations: increased effectiveness. We bring together very talented people who don't work for the same organization, but they're trying to accomplish the same goals. We may reduce our costs for benefits or for office space or for travel. It can lead to improved client satisfaction if the output from the virtual teams or virtual organizations is better than what they could get from a more traditional organization. Our organization can be less capital intensive, and we may have fewer investment needs to create a new organization that has a new purpose. Our expenses can be reduced. We can shorten our lead times to create new products or deliver services. If we are delivering products, we may be able to better manage our inventory and produce to demand. And we can use the same technologies that are part of the virtual organization to directly connect with the customer. So if we use emails and databases extensively in our virtual organization, we can use those same tools to connect with suppliers and customers. Well, the last thing I want to go over is the new alternative organization structures that we see developing as a result of information technology. I'm not going to go into these in depth. I do want to mention them quickly, and I refer you to the Chapter 7 of the Decision Support Systems book. First is a community structure. Community structure is oftentimes put together by acquisitions of companies, so that we may have three or four companies that are in the same industry. These industries become related, and because of the interdependence of the organizations that we've acquired or created through startups, we've created some relationships, whether it's supplier or customer relationships, and we have reporting and resource sharing relationships. So we can think of these interdependent organizations being grouped into a multi-level hierarchy by information technology, where they share information, they share resources, they communicate, or the managers communicate within this organization network or community. Then we can look at a federation structure. A federation structure is where some people are not necessarily employed by the same organization. They may be independent professionals like lawyers or doctors or small business owners, but they're sharing some resources like an accounting service or a billing service or receivables collection or scheduling, and they also share some centralized computing resources, perhaps a web database or other kind of tool through an application service provider. And it's a federation in the sense that the independent businesses or independent professionals have their own organizations, but they pay fees to participate in this federated structure. Then we have a mobile structure, and we can think of this especially for smaller organizations where we use information technology to support the organization as it members move from one client encounter or client event to another, or they go and do work remote from a physical premise. So I think we call it mobile because we can pick up our technology, we can move our people, and they can go work for a client or customer for a month or 2 months or 3 months, and then they move on and work for another customer. Finally, the skyscraper structure. That's where we've basically said that we have some managers who have a lot of responsibility and maybe spending authority in an organization, but they don't really manage other people, and they do their work using information technology. And we see skyscraper structures in financial services, perhaps in entertainment. And in these industries, we value the benefits of rewarding people with job titles like vice president, but they're not involved in direct line relationships. They interact with customers and they use information technology to process transactions and for decision support. And so the hierarchy gets stretched. So we have lots of people at various senior ranks in the organization who don't really have anybody reporting to them. So it looks like we have many layers or levels in the hierarchy, but people don't have lots of direct reporting relationships to subordinates. So that kind of a structure is a stretched structure. Now, information technology is impacting organizations. It's changing the roles and relationships between people, and we need to be aware of that, and we need to look at how we can make those organizations efficient and effective. The last slide talks about how we want to evaluate these communications-driven DSS products. And it says the first thing we want to do is look on at reliability. If we're using information technology to tie our organization together, we need to make sure that it's operating 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. We need to think about cost, both fixed costs and then variable costs if there are variable costs associated with the application. Sometimes with service providers, their variable costs or per seat costs, and those can be significant, and we need to take them into account depending on the size of our organization. Scalability. We need to make sure that as our organization grows or we bring more members of the organization to use the technologies, that the technologies that we've deployed will handle more concurrent users. So we may have thousands of people using the same bulletin boards or web-based video conferencing products concurrently, and that can create tremendous load on our information network infrastructure. Security. Are these products going to be secure? If we use email, can we expect that others will not be able to intercept or read our email? Can we encrypt it or do other things to protect the integrity of the communications? Development features, we don't usually do much to customize. We buy communications-driven DSS products off the shelf. We may use a system integrator to help us pull technologies together, but we may want to add our logo or other help information particular to our organization, and so we need some development features. And then ease of installation and use. Ease of installation is important for the IT folks in the organization, and ease of use is important in terms of what the training costs are going to be for the communications-driven decision support technologies. Well, I recommend that you read What is the Role of Decision Support in Virtual Organizations, and that you look through the other ASDANs on the characteristics of communications-driven DSS, and that you become familiar with these various technologies.